No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony, along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez. We hope that our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in and join in the discussion. I hope you will. Our number is 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Tonight, I'm going to have one of my favorite people in the world on the show with me, Doug, who's going to fill in for Maria because Maria is taking care of her mom, who's ailing a little bit right now. And so our best wishes go out to Viola and to Maria. We all hope that your mom recovers quickly. And Maria will be back next week. I also want to tell you that I just came back from a wedding in Cincinnati. It was really beautiful. And so I'd like to send out congratulations to Stephen and Karen. Thank you so much for including me and Mrs. Brown in such a happy occasion. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. Maybe we can talk a little bit about it on the show. But before I bring Doug on to discuss anything and everything, let me first tell you the big news in statehood. There's big news in statehood. Alex Mayer, a United Kingdom Labour Party member representing the East England region, spoke at a plenary session of the legislative body that governs the European Union to push the body to recognize DC residents' lack of voting rights at the federal level. Mayer said, "We in the European Parliament call out human rights violations across the world. I see no reason not to do so in this case. The citizens of the District of Columbia are denied the basic rights that other living in liberal democracies take for granted. It is time that the 200-year-old injustice was ended." In a straightforward and stern tone, Mayer said she was baffled to learn that the district's 700,000 residents lacked voting representation in the U.S. Congress. "Quite frankly," she said, "when I first heard that 700,000 U.S. citizens in Washington don't have the right to elect senators and congressmen or women who actually get to vote on laws, I was baffled. That's more people than live in Malta or Luxembourg who are disenfranchised." So thank you so much, Alex. We so much appreciate that you've called this out, and we're on the international scene making progress. As you may or may not know, we're part of the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organizations, and my colleague Paul Strauss and Representative Garcia, both of my colleagues, were in France this weekend at a meeting there. So we're getting this on the international stage. We're really excited about this because America should be embarrassed that we don't have the same rights that everybody else has. So that's the latest news. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Alex Mayer. We so much appreciate your help. You're a wonderful person, and we hope to move this along even further in Europe and elsewhere. And now, let me introduce the luminary of the airwaves, the sage of internet radio, Doug. Are you there?
I am. Thank you, Senator. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show once again.
Oh my God, you're one of our favorite guests. You know that.
I'm blushing.
You're just amazing. And we really love your perspective, and you know it's a different perspective, and sometimes, and that's good, right? We hear the same old over and over again, and as a liberal Democrat, it really bothers me. I just came back. Let's start here, Doug. I just came back from a wedding in Cincinnati, and I had a stopover in Zanesville, Ohio, to visit my brother. And this is the heartland of America. Mm. And I don't think the Democrats are getting it. I still don't think they understand how people out there feel.
Right.
You know, and I think it's going to hurt them in the long run. I really do. What do you think?
I would totally agree with you. They don't. I often wish that the politicians on many levels weren't bombarded by company payers, but so much citizen payers, because they lose contact with the citizens and they become all about what they're lobbied on and all these self-interest groups. So, yeah, they lose touch. How do you bring them back in touch? I don't know. What can a citizen offer a politician?
The only thing that a citizen can offer a politician, I think, is a vote. And a vote is discounted when people don't come out. Mm. Look, we just had a primary election. I got to talk about this. We just had a primary election where 18% of the registered voters in the District of Columbia voted. I mean, that's atrocious. We are the capital of the United States, and 72% of the eligible voters didn't show up at the polls. So there's no way to combat what you're talking about when only 18% of us show up. And even worse than that, tomorrow I'm going to go testify at a hearing because during the vote in the primary, we passed an initiative about tipped wage workers raising their income to minimum wage, and it passed. Now, I worked against its passage, and many people worked against its passage, but the voters came to the poll and they passed it. So now the people on the city council that were on my side want to overturn the initiative. And I just think that's outrageous.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's amazing. How can we go up to Capitol Hill every day and complain that we don't have the same rights as everybody else and that they won't listen to the voters of the District of Columbia when our own elected officials, seven of them anyway, have decided they also don't want to listen to the voters in the district.
It's
just crazy.
Right. Well, that brings back the real question of to the person who is going to decide whether he's going to take the time out of his life to vote or not. Right. It's the level of importance of the vote.
Yep.
You know, if I have to worry about whether I feed my kids or whether I go to work or so many things. So what's the level of importance? So right now, the level of importance of voting is very low. And the idea that these, you know, the fact that you have people writing, economists, smart economists get a lot of airtime now, that projecting and understanding that the average voter has such an insignificant level of value that it's irrelevant whether they vote or not. You know, you hear that a lot. You hear that a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't think the average American has any understanding, and here's where, because you've made it very large, if I put you in a conundrum with 1,000 problems, that would be so large you'd avoid it. Well, if I put you in with one problem or two or three, you might be able to get to it. So how do we take the problems away with the idea? What I mean by problems is mental associations with negative feelings or negative understandings. Those are problems. So those are the things you're battling. You're not battling, an outward. You're battling people on the inside of themselves and what they think are problems. And the problems might be what I just expressed to you and more. But it's on an emotional aspect. So how do we take those problems away? That's a question. For me, it'd almost be like if I thought my vote would count because I'm at the local level. There's only 1,000 people, and if I don't vote, it makes a, you know, but my vote counts. Even that, like a lottery. Are you going to play the lottery if your vote counts 1 in 1,000? Are you? Really? Come on, are you? How about 1 in 100? 1 in 50?
Well,
But there's a lottery aspect to it in respect that there's a sense that it doesn't, the numbers are so large that my vote doesn't count. The numbers are so large. That's the thing you got to fight against. You got to educate against that.
Right.
And one of the things.
Go ahead.
And one of the things I see in the world is that we're educating against the idea that those numbers are astronomical and that corporations do rule us and there really is no way to win that war. And so that's the mindset of the public. That ideology, that understanding has to change. How do you change it? I don't know. Putting out ads, maybe. Here's one. Voting locally makes a difference. At this level, your vote counts. Oh my gosh. I mean, I just said a lot. Crazy idea. But I'm just throwing out to you an understanding that says, okay, we're going to make that vote count. We're going to make it, it's something significant. You draw a bigger crowd. Not to say you could do it on the national level, how you do it on the national level, but it takes away a fear again. My vote doesn't count. So, but understanding that perspective is a win. I wish I could answer that question more fully. I wish I could.
Well, you know what? I think you're right about that. But education is really an important thing. And one of the things that people have to understand about voting is that you don't only vote for yourself. You vote for everybody that's like you. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they don't cut Social Security, but they cut education. And that's because they understand that young people don't vote and old people do vote. So when you vote, no matter how you vote or who you vote for, you're voting for everybody that's your age, your race, your sex, your economic background.
You're right.
Because when young people vote, if enough young people voted, they'd be afraid to cut education.
Sure.
But it's not.
Watch this. Okay, now I'm going to turn the table upside down. Senator.
Yeah.
Okay. What if I said my vote doesn't count because the political people in the party always voted along party lines anyways?
Well, there you go.
Well, that's the opposite point of the, you know what I mean? They do. And in that respect, it means even if I vote, it doesn't mean anything's going to change because along the party lines. Yeah, I hate the other but I vote for it, but I was always along party lines. What does that mean?
Well, you got to vote in the primary. You got to change the people in the party to make a difference. You know, come on, we're all out there on the liberal side complaining about Donald Trump. And I've got to tell you, I went to a forum one time after President Trump was elected. A group of women got together and they wanted to know what they could do, and they invited me to come speak to them, and some woman stood up and said, "We have nothing as liberals to apologize for." And I looked at her and I said, "Are you crazy? This man got elected because of you. We're all in this together."
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem.
We can't
that
step
we
it.
See each other on right. two different sides.
Right.
You know, if the
right.
liberals had done right. more, had put up maybe a better candidate. I was a Hillary Clinton superdelegate. Don't get me wrong. But maybe our candidate wasn't right. Maybe enough of us didn't come out and vote. Whatever that situation was, the liberals have to accept responsibility for this man just the same as conservatives.
Here's the new Democratic slogan.
Yeah.
Here it is. You want to win? Right, you want to win the average American heart? Okay.
Yes.
We listen to the opposite point of view.
Yeah. You know what? I've got to tell you, Doug, you're always hitting the nail right on the head. I don't know how you do it, but that's exactly the way
right.
I feel. I feel like the
right.
next Democratic presidential candidate needs to get in a
right.
damn Winnebago and travel across America.
You made it. You made the slogan. We listen to the opposite point of view. I tell you, if I had a Democrat that said that, they could even waffle in their opinions and it would be justifiable. Wow! You've actually given, now for the first time, you've given the idea that a politician can go both ways and there's a reason for it. Other than, ooh, you didn't do it, you didn't do it. So, that's a brilliant slogan. It really is. And it does hit the point, because that's where it frustrates most human individuals.
Well, that's right. And I think we all understand that we're not perfect. And that's a problem, too.
But we got to listen.
Right.
We got to be coming together. We got to be able to see the other point of view and project that we can with empathy.
Yes.
To draw that other point of view in.
Oh, my God, Doug. I was wondering what I was going to do in the election year, and now I've got it. Doug for president. I'm definitely starting the Doug for President campaign here on BBS Radio.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be a grassroots campaign. We're going to get you out there. You know, but
you're better. You're great. You're great. I mean, everybody, you are loved. You know that your personality is such. It's great humor, great personality. You are loved. You really are. And I'm so grateful that you are where you are and making a difference.
Well, you know, I mean, you really do have to look at it that way, right? Not only is the problem as you outlined it, but there's also the underlying thing, which dovetails right into what you're saying about us, you know, the whole labeling thing. I don't want to listen to you, Doug, because you're a Republican.
Right.
I don't want to listen to you, Joe, because you're a Democrat.
Right.
I don't want to listen, you know,
because you're a neocon.
Woman,
because
right,
you're a whatever.
You're a neocon. Or you can't accept, you know, you can take 80% of the liberal platform or 80% of the Republican, but you know you're a Republican that believes in strong gun control, so we don't want to hear you. Or you're a liberal woman who thinks that there should be stronger laws against a woman's right to choose. Perhaps that's not a position that I take, but you know, can we not listen to people?
Right.
Look, I understand why people don't like the idea of abortion. I think that women have the right to control their own bodies, but I certainly understand why people have a problem with it, and I think we need to talk about it. I also understand why people want guns to feel safe, and I think we have to sit down and talk about it. And when we say no guns or all guns, we can never meet in the middle.
Right. Right. Well, you know what you are? You just buttered me up. You just gave my, and I've got, and it's going to take me a while to wipe it off.
That's all right. That's right. Just talk to any woman you know and she'll help.
I don't even know. Here's how I need to put it. I don't even know another senator that has a weekly a forum where the average person can interact with the senator. Do you know of another senator that does a weekly show on either TV or radio in this country besides yourself?
Well, no, I don't. And you know what? Maybe we should do more of it. Maybe we should do more than just town hall meetings when we're running for office.
Right.
But, you know, and listen, don't, you know, there's no way to get the money that you talk about and the influence that you talk about out of politics unless we get people out there
right.
that are willing to demand an answer and listen and make people listen. You know, Look at what those kids at Parkland High School in Florida accomplished in a very short period of time when there was that terrible tragedy down there. And they stood up and they said, no more, no more. We're not going to lose any more students. We're going to stand up and we're going to say no. They got the attention of the media. They got the attention of politicians. Now, we haven't seen that transform into new laws yet, but they've gotten the ball rolling, and we need to build on that momentum, and we all need to show up.
How about just take you a step further? So far beyond, this will show you. What if the Democratic platform was true democracy? And here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Let's just say that based on the tax bill you have 20 or 30 categories you can place X percentage of that capital in. Like, no, I don't. You know how I hate, let me tell you another reason why people are disgusted with politics. Because no matter who they vote in, $1 trillion goes to bombing other people. I'm sorry. Yeah. That bothers me. Yeah. That really bothers me. So what if true democracy meant that you get to allocate the capital of your taxes going for particular areas? I know that's crazy. I'm just thinking outside the box. But you might say, okay, nobody agree on 30 characters, but can we agree on 2, maybe 3, maybe 5? You know.
Well, I don't know that it's such a crazy idea if you put it into context. Now, I think what you're talking about, if you take it literally, is you're talking about socialism. And that's
well, not
really
socialism
not
so much. Not socialism. You tax. All the things are taxed. But the actual vote, the person who's paying the taxes, gets to allocate his tax base, not everybody's, to certain categories. Okay, maybe one wants it all to go into teaching or one to go. I don't know if this would work or not, or whether there'd be, you know, great organizations that would manipulate the consumer and they'd get all the money and be done. But if you really want a PR game and you want to empower the voter with the value of their vote, because the value of the vote seems like not very much. Maybe you give them something more with the vote, and the vote, and this is to bring more people in to vote. I'm telling you, you don't want 18%, you want 100%. So they got to participate on other levels, and maybe that level of participation is the allocation of where their funds are going to go.
Well, you know, the problem I see with that is that you're going to want 100% of your money to be rebated to people that work at internet radio stations. And teachers are going to want their money.
There is. I agree.
Education.
So what you're saying is there's a problem with true democracy. There's a problem with true democracy because the average man will make the wrong move. So you don't really believe in democracy. You believe in controlled democracy. I get it.
Representative democracy. But you know what? If you're going to have representative democracy, you can have the kind of democracy you want if you're represented. If you get enough people out there that go, yeah, we want the money to go into education, it will go into education. But when we sit around and we talk about it and we don't actually show
up. Got to make it less complicated and more direct. 20% of my income is going to education. 30% to, I don't know, whatever. But if you could allocate a percentage of whatever percentage your income would, you'd know the true representation of the people. You would.
Those institutions
that were thought of as important, like the military, might have no importance whatsoever.
Well, you know what? I mean, if we do that, we have to make adjustments, like we have to raise the voting age because everybody from 18 to 25 would vote that all the money go to beer.
Maybe
you know?
You're right. Maybe I
would say,
yeah, and geography, and right,
more
there'd be a host of problems. host of problems, including how old the exactly how old the population is. Do we push for people living longer or shorter lives because it sways the vote? Right. There are millions of complications. I'd love to take them all on.
Look, now you're getting into my ear. Look, if you're talking about the age of the population, I got to tell you, at 65, I don't want to be put out on an iceberg. And I see all these young people going, yeah, let's get rid of them. The hell with Social Security. Let's just get rid of them at 65. Right. No, I don't think you can do that. But no, I really, just in all seriousness, I think if you show up and you don't want money going to the military budget, and you show up with other people that don't want money going to the military budget, if there's enough people doing that, you cut the military budget. But, you know, the thing is that we complain and we moan and we sure. You know.
We give excuses. And the greatest salesman goes out and he's answered all the excuses in his pitch before the consumer gets to respond. That's the art of the deal.
Well, and you know what? So much of what you say is true. And what happened with, if you look at the Trump election, because look, the majority of people polled after the election, a third of the people that voted for Trump said they didn't think he was qualified. But what Trump said is, you send me to Washington and I'll kick them around, I'll drain the swamp, I'll mix things up. And people said, hell yes, let's get to those people. Let's mix it up. I often said, Trump supporters aren't the people that leave a note on your car when you've taken their parking space at the mall. They're the people that wait for you to go in and then they key your car. And that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to key the cars of the bureaucracy in Washington. And they've done it. Hey, there's got to be somebody out there listening that agrees with Doug. Okay, and there may even be some of you out there that are sober that agree with Doug. Call in and let's talk.
Yes,
but I think you nailed the problem right on the head. People feel in D.C. we're actually disenfranchised, but people in California and other places that have the vote feel disenfranchised.
Right.
They feel like vote doesn't count.
Right, right.
They feel like it's not going to make a difference.
Right.
And we see this over and over again.
So we got to give them a piece of, how we train mice. We give them a little bit more candy. They move. I'm sorry. I'm not. And people boy, that was so wrong to say on air, because if I like people, I don't. And by the way, I don't feel that way. But I do feel that there is a mechanism where the value prop, that's why we have democracy. That's one of the reasons we have a capitalism. Could you imagine a world without capitalism? My brother and I were discussing this yesterday. Don just blurts out, he goes, if it were me, I wouldn't allow a person to make X amount of money. I go, Don, that would ruin the incentive system.
Right.
You got to have an incentive system. So what would you do? What would you do? Let's say if you wanted, you senator, now get to make the final decision, and the world right now is you have great disparagements between the poor man and the rich man. How do you solve that problem? I throw that question out to you.
Well, I think that the purpose of government, if that's your question, how do you make government do it? The purpose of government is to try to equalize the playing field. And there's two ways you can do that. You can regulate things, but overregulation is not a good thing. Or you can provide opportunity. And I think that's what you do. I think you provide opportunity. I think you provide education. Look, you know what? This is one thing that I like about Elizabeth Warren. She says, we loan money to banks at 3/4%, okay? And then we loan money to students at 12.5%.
Great point.
Yeah. What sense does that make?
Right.
We need the next generation to be productive and to add to the economy, make the economy grow. And so to do it's in the best interest of the economy.
Right.
to give the kids the money at 0.75%,
right,
or even free education.
Right.
You know,
right,
that will return many, many benefits. Look at what we do.
Sure.
You know, I read a book when I was in college called Welfare
for
the Rich.
You're so right, by the way. You're so right. I just want to tell the world, I think you're so right. Go on.
But Welfare for the Rich listed all the welfare programs for the rich. And there's more welfare programs for the rich in America than there are for the poor. Just take the fact that every month I get to write off more than $1,000, like $1,500 a month interest that I pay on a loan for my mortgage. But if you rent an apartment for $3,000 a month, you don't get any tax write-off.
Right. Right.
And why did we do that? We did that because we wanted home ownership. And it was an important thing that helped our country grow.
Mm.
And we wanted to encourage people to buy houses.
Mm.
So we made that incentive. And that's what we have to do, I think. You know, well, let's move. I want to move shortly
on
to talk.
Very good point.
To ask you a few questions about the media. But you look at Hurricane Florence right now.
Right.
Do you know that you could not afford, no one could afford to build a house on the beach in California or in North Carolina if they didn't have government subsidized insurance? Because you
question
couldn't
for
afford
you, though.
This
question for you.
Question
for you. What? And I get that. But it's almost like they elect to be in a high risk category.
Yes.
And their insurance is now affecting everybody. So, you know, it's like,
yes,
60% of the insurance is to go for the last 6 months of everybody's life. That's true. You know, all costs of medical, you go to a doctor, all put all the hospital bills. Well, most, 60% of it is for the last 6 months of life care. You wonder, is that fair?
Look, Doug, you're putting people out on icebergs again. You got to stop
right, but
it.
I'm looking at
us
the point of
people.
I got to look at the opposite point of view when I talk to you. You know why? Because we got to stretch our minds to understand both points and how to solve it.
I agree, and that's why you're one of our favorite guests.
I
am. Because you think outside the box, right? And that is important. And we do need to listen to that. But the point is, you know, we need to subsidize things from the government standpoint that help people create opportunities. We do it in business all the time.
Sure.
We have everything from enterprise zones to tax breaks for certain businesses that do certain things that we see are in the common interest. But we need to refocus that, I think, on individuals and take care of things that are in interest for the country with individuals, and we've done it somewhat. You know,
No. All the the government keeps the tax policies on so many levels benefit the rich. If the government really wanted to show that it was closer to the people, it would tax wealth more.
Yes.
Even Warren Buffett said, "Tax me more."
Yes,
it's so stupid. And by the way, even the people that like Trump, deep down in their heart, and this is where you got to hit people, don't care about the superficial. Deep down in the heart, they all know that's true.
Yes. And you know what? There's nothing more marginal in the world than money. Money is the single most marginal thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have, if you make $10,000 a year, making an extra $10,000 a year is really important.
Mm.
But if you make $300,000 a year, making an extra $10,000 is almost meaningless.
Right.
So why not
tax it?
Right. And
look,
and
they made it based off of
now,
resources.
I don't want to end up like Europe. I don't want to end up where, you know, people are fleeing the country
putting
their
There's
money elsewhere because they're so highly taxed.
Right.
But I do agree with that. And I think, you know, look, it doesn't matter. And when I talk about the marginality of money, you know, does it really matter much whether you're driving a Cadillac or a Ford Focus? They both get you to the same place at the same time. They both come with air conditioning and power steering. You know what I mean? I mean, really, we need to draw a line somewhere where it makes sense. And I think that tax policy, where you give people incentives to reinvest, makes a lot of sense.
Right.
You don't take money away from them. You do what you said earlier. Where do you want your money to go?
Right.
Well, you know, just like you can write off contributions to nonprofits and to charities, you do the same thing. You say, look, if you're willing to put money into education for your kids, you get to write it off. And you can to a certain extent, but we need to increase that. Mm-hmm. If you are willing to invest in things that help the community, infrastructure, anything.
Sure.
We should give you a break on
some
that
sort of a benefit. You absolutely, well, that's the, to me, government guides in that way.
Yes.
And because people aren't going to do it themselves. No, they do in their own world, but on a larger perspective, there's a community, and somebody's got to guide that world too. You know, that world. And so I do believe that. But here's one of the other things I would suggest, you know, in really appealing to the American public, because it's so important outside of the fact that they feel their dollars are wasted or their message isn't heard, is kind of what you've emphasized, outside of the fact that they need to hear another person's opinion, is they got to be guided about where the money, what's happening with the governance, the flow of everything to the outside world. And to me, I just don't see priorities set on the Democratic side. I see almost a socialist agenda. And by the way, socialism, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It's almost like, do you need a benevolent government to deal with socialism? I don't even know what the difference sometimes is between socialism and the democracy we have. I swear to God, I don't.
Well, you know what? That's the advantage that capitalism has over socialism, excuse me, and communism, is that individuals are better at deciding what they need than bureaucrats that you have to rely on to be benevolent. It's better, you know, if I had to give you 10 rules of politics, one of them would be God bless the child that's got its own. You know, I would steal from Porgy and Bess because that's absolutely the truth.
Does the U.S.
better to have it in, better for you to control it than to allow somebody else control it? So I think you got to figure out a way to get money back to the people.
But what's socialism? How is socialism different? Run a country running socialism different from the U.S. Because don't we employ socialism on so many levels? So I really want to know, how do you make that, you know, rather than stupid, when I hear comments on the, you know, news where, oh, you don't want to go here, you don't want to go here, I always think we're always been here. It's almost like words. It's like, here's the funny thing. We define words. We call one thing a bribe, and yet another thing we call it just an ordinance of business because there's rule allocated to this that makes it legal. Still a bribe to me. You've just confused me with funny words. But the money ends up in the same location, and it's didn't need any of this, and it's the same bloody thing. So,
well, that's absolutely true, and you know, the people that write the funny words are the people that get out there again. You know, for
how
us,
do you assure people the government doesn't use funny words? How do you assure people the government's intentions are real and lasting? That's another thing that I would.
Well, the government has a very simple intention. And it's very much, the politicians have a very simple intention, just like businesses. Businesses, the intention of business is to make money and to perpetuate themselves. The intention of a politician is to get himself elected and to perpetuate himself. So that's where, you know, just like as a consumer, I can say to you, you know what, Doug, this is what I want. And you can say to me as a business person, well, I'll give you this or I won't give it to you. And then I get to decide whether to take my business down the street or continue to take business with you. You got to do the same thing to politicians. Mm. You got to say, this is what I want. And if you won't give it to me, I'm going to find somebody that will. Right. And you need to introduce competition into the system like you do in business. And that's another thing that we really have to worry about, is that the consolidation, you know, of all this stuff, Amazon, Walmart, all these businesses that are growing in leaps and bounds, and the more you consolidate things in fewer hands, the harder it's going to be to accomplish.
Isn't that true?
And you know, I remember, this is one thing I remember from economics, is that there was a company, International Baking, I think it's called, but they looked out across the country. And they saw that bakeries were local, that nobody had a way to distribute bread nationally. And they came up with an idea, and it was called Wonder Bread. Mm. And they figured out a way to distribute it nationally, to put regional factories or bakeries, whatever, and distribute it nationally. Then they went into communities, okay, and they sold their bread for less money than it cost to bake their bread, because they knew that they could afford to do that. And they took great losses at first. But you know what happened? They put all the local bakeries out of business, and then they could charge whatever the hell they wanted.
Right. What a ploy. Bread. What a ploy.
That's not
an instant ploy. That's an actual thoughtful entity that sees out into the future 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
As most companies do.
Right. Yeah. Big companies, right?
Right.
Little companies.
It's almost day to day for us.
Right. Right. I just got a thing over my desk.
Right.
That was a quote from an economist that said, in the long run, we're all dead. Because that's what small businesses say, right? We're going to make it till the next payroll. We're going to make it till next month.
Right.
If we're lucky, we'll plan for next year. But we don't plan for 5 or 10 years.
Sure. You know?
In Asian philosophy, sometimes they plan for the next 100 years.
Isn't that crazy?
And that's an advantage that they have. And where in small businesses, you're always.
But that advantage requires control. Just know that advantage, an advantage like that, requires control. So would you be willing to take the advantage and impose the control?
No, and that's the point. Walmart,
well, then that's as simple as it gets, explaining it in that manner.
More control, and when they get more control, they'll be able to plan for the long run.
Right.
And you know what? Well, yeah, you'll be working like you used to work 150 years ago in England. You'll be, you know, when the Industrial Revolution started.
But what if you're the president and you control us? What if you're the president and you control us just like you would a force that is on some level against the forces across the globe? Some of them may not be democracy oriented. Some may be, you know, monarchies based. I mean, what do you do? Because now you really do have to play that sort of a role where people are going to die.
Well, people die every day in our government as well, you know, and from the choices that we make. You know, we see people in poverty. Washington, D.C. is one great example of that. You know, we pay the highest per capita taxes in America. And the reason that we pay the highest per capita taxes in America is we're the wealthiest people in America. But we also have some of the poorest people in America. We really are a city sometimes that's like right out of a Dickens novel, you know, the best of times and the worst of times. Parts of our city are really poor. Kids don't get a decent education. They don't have decent health care. And then you can go to other parts of our city where people are just phenomenally wealthy. You know, more money than they know what to do. They've got, you know, 3 Lexuses in the garage.
I got
and
a
they,
question
you know,
for you.
Yeah.
I got a big question for you. I'm going to put you on the spot. Remember I told you this whole day, I'm going to ask you a lot of heavy questions. I'm going to go the opposite extreme. I'm going to always point out the opposite point of view. But Would you allow for each specific, not just state, but right down to the county level, they have their own ordinances, they have their own governance, they allow for their own constitution, and wish to proliferate the idea that every locality can have their own understanding? Or would you want a more universal, everybody lives under one, this is it? And if you wanted both, how would that be possible?
Well, you know, you have somewhat of a system like that in America today, at least on paper. Okay, you have the United States Constitution, and then that is the controlling document of the United States. It's one document that controls us all. And of course, in Washington, D.C., it's the bane of our existence in some extent, because it says we can't have the right to have representation. So we fight it all the time. But you also have the Constitution. You have 50 individual states. And it says in the Constitution that any right, any law that does not violate the Constitution and is not reserved to the federal government is the province of the state government. So California can make the laws that it wants to make, and as long as it doesn't violate the United States Constitution, for example, you can't make a law that says, people named Doug can't vote. You know, you can't make a law like that because that would violate the Equal Protection Clause. As long as you don't do that, you can make your own laws. And we know that laws are different from different jurisdictions, right? In D.C., for example, we have tough gun laws. In Florida, I mean, I think your average 9-year-old can own a gun. But you know, we that, of course, is an exaggeration. But you know, laws are different from different jurisdictions. So we have a
system
like that.
My point is, you're defending this system, this notion that there should be some sort of level of autonomy. I'm pulling you into a scenario where I've just given you an area where you could have union, one rule, or autonomy, lots of rule. And you've just spoken on the benefits of autonomy, and that's part of the Constitution and blah. And yet the whole world wants to move to non-autonomy. Just know this, that the average human being out there sees what I'm just telling you right now, very clear and simple ways, and it doesn't understand that. I mean, if you were a person of where you wanted the ability to pick and choose, you wouldn't understand that. You wouldn't understand where the world's going, and you might even fight against it.
Well, you know, and this is an old, old principle in political philosophy. And when the country was founded, they believed that people weren't educated enough to make the decision. So they didn't let women vote. They didn't let our African Americans vote. They didn't let people that fought in the Revolutionary War vote unless they were 21 years old, they were white, and they owned property. And we were an agrarian society, and they believed that if you didn't own land, you didn't have a stake in the game. So why should you have anything to say? Right. And if you were a woman, you weren't educated because we didn't educate women in 1789 as a rule. So why should we let you vote? You wouldn't know what the hell you were voting for. This was the belief they had, but we've moved away from that. And we've moved more to the point that Jefferson made when he established, you know, his philosophy on America. And he said the legitimate right to govern flows from the rights of from the consent of the governed. Mm. Only if the governed consent do you get the power. We hand you the power. And let me tell you, just to your earlier point, I always said if I ever got to teach a course in basic political science, the first thing I would do is I would make the kids watch a movie about a Broadway musical called The Music Man. And The Music Man is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's about a guy that sells, he's a con man, and he sells boys' bands, which he has no idea about musical instruments or instruction, but he comes to a town in Iowa, and he says to them in the movie, I'm going to sell you a boys band and teach everybody how to play, and we're going to form a boys band. So the whole town gets into it. And at the end, at the beginning, the town is separated and it doesn't, people don't get along. And at the end, everybody gets together and they come and they go to make the boys band, except there's no boys band. So the people go out and they catch the guy and they want to tar and feather him. And the local, the local librarian, kudos to Mrs. Brown, who's a librarian. The local librarian stands up and she says, look, this guy did everything he said he was going to do. He didn't produce a boys band, but what he did was he brought us together. He made us speak to each other. He made a community out of something that was desperate and separated. He brought us together. And that's really the truth about politics. Politicians are con men, but they take us places that we can't go on our very own. Right. If we could, we wouldn't need them. But yes, we're always conning you. We're always out there telling you the world's going to be a better place. We're going to make America great again. When the hell did America not become great? Right. You've always been great.
Right.
But, you know, they got people saying, yeah, we're going to make it great again.
It's and like
that's
teaching
the side.
It's a teaching a kid. You wouldn't say to the kid, a child, no mother would, no family would, that you're not great. Oh, you're not great and so-and-so's better. By the way, that kid's got problems. If they have a mother and dad and did that to the child, you know, there's value. Give a kid an equal value, like in a spiritual sense, you'd say everybody's equal and everybody's equally loved. But you'd also emphasize those points where they're great. You know, you're great because of.
So why does that end? Why does that end? Why do we go out as parents and clap and scream and yell at the kids when they kick the soccer ball and it goes 3 feet?
Right.
You know, we're all like, oh, you're so wonderful. Look, you know, I had a friend from South America who said, I can't stand that. Then, you know, they just go out there and all the kid has to do is walk out onto the field. Even if he trips, they all stand up and go, yay. Mm-hmm. Well, why do we end that? Why can't we do that with adults? Why can't we say to people, yes, whatever your contribution is, it's a great contribution. It makes America better, whether you work at Jiffy Lube and you're draining oil out of people's cars, or whether you're the CEO of the most important company in the country.
You just thought of the new Democratic slogan, without you, we can't exist.
There you go. We're all in this together. We all
right.
make a difference. We're all part of the.
You're that important.
We're all part of the problem. We're all part of the solution.
You're
that
important. You're that important.
So I got to say to you,
without
America,
you, we can't exist.
If you're out there listening, you need to use the new hashtag that we have come up with on Shadow Politics to change America. And that hashtag is hashtag We Need Doug. And I want you to tweet that out. That's got to be our new hashtag. Hashtag We Need Doug.
You're killing me.
You know? And that's what I want to do. And I'm sure
I
when Maria
you,
comes
You're
back
great
next
man.
Week, we'll still, you know, we're going to push it. We need Doug. That the heck with all this other nonsense, we need Doug. We need a person that wants to give back. We need a person that wants to move ahead. We need a pure person that needs to see the future, and that man is Doug.
Oh, see, I'm a talker. You're the doer. You're the doer, Senator. I'm a talker.
Yeah, but you're the thinker.
You're a
doer. And
that's
what we need.
You know what we need is people like you. There's too many thinkers, too few doers.
Yeah, well, there you go. There are a lot of thinkers, and there are less doers.
I value you, Senator. You are a great spirit and a human individual and a senator, and we're so lucky to have you with us. I really mean that.
Well, and you know what? in the vein of what I just talked about, I feel exactly the same. I feel I'm blessed to have you and Maria and all the other people associated and with Maria. The show, because we get the word out, and that's what happens. But we're out of time because you're such a phenomenal guest that we never have enough time with you. And I want to leave you. Let's see if we can find. Let you pick the song this week, and you know, just don't make it Brick House or something like that.
Oh my goodness! How about if we make it Universal?
Yes, let's make something Universal.
Okay, You Are a Diamond by Seth Haley.
You light up any room. You shine, that's just what you do. Such a wonder to behold. You're a diamond.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to